Hi, I'm Amanda Borchel-Dunn. Welcome to the Times of Israel Daily Briefing.
Your update on what's important in Israel, the Middle East, and the Jewish world. Hello and welcome to the Times of Israel's Daily Briefing. It's the 6th of September 2021, Erev Rosh Hashanah, New Year's Eve in the Jewish calendar. And I'm delighted to be joined today by our health and science correspondent, Nathan Jeffe, and our breaking news editor and Olympic and Paralympic correspondent for the past couple of months, Amy Spiro.
Hi, Rel.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining me, guys. On today's show, we'll be looking at the preparations for the first Jewish festival in Israel without restrictions on family gatherings since before the pandemic began early last year. With the pandemic on our minds, we'll take a look back at the year that was 5781 and ask how Israel and its citizens have coped with the virus over the past 12 months. A day after the Paralympics, held this year in the shadow of the virus, ended, we'll review the past 3 weeks of Israeli sporting achievements in Tokyo. And finally, doctors in Israel have separated co-joined twins and say that after the tense 12-hour operation, both babies are likely to live completely normal lives. We'll look at the seemingly miracle operation that took place just yesterday. So Nathan, starting with you, there's been a lot of talk leading up to this Rosh Hashanah about the possible need for another lockdown over the holidays, like there was for Rosh Hashanah last year. Tell us how Israel has managed to avoid it this year, and is it the right decision?
Well, the first thing is obviously vaccinations. Vaccinations, vaccinations, vaccinations. Israel led the field in vaccinations and also led the world in these third shots, in these booster shots. And that's been absolutely key to ensuring that we could keep a sense of normality. It's almost unimaginable to Israelis what we would be facing now with the ultra-infectious Delta variant were it not for the fact that we were widely vaccinated. So that's very clearly hugely important. But other things have been happening as well. A year ago, I wrote a piece for Times of Israel talking about decision-making. The decision-making was chaotic. The communication with the public was chaotic. There was a major lack of trust between the government and the public. And what we're seeing now is a very different dynamic. We're seeing communication. Nothing's perfect, but we are seeing communication between the leadership and the public. We're seeing a sense that this is, in a way, a joint venture. I think the fact that parents were asked to test their children at home before sending them to school, not take them for a formal test, not present official paperwork, but hey, this is the government, we're trusting you, we're asking you to do this, we're relying on your integrity to do this. I think that builds a very different dynamic, and I think that's what we're seeing now, with the government appealing to people to be sensible, to do the right things during the festival. We don't know exactly how that will work out. For sure, there will be lots of people who will transgress rules, who will have huge gatherings. Things will go wrong. We'll see a spike after Rosh Hashanah. There's no doubt about that at all. But the steps that have been taken, the vaccinations, the trust building, the communication, do mean that we are in perhaps, you know, a relatively good place facing this Rosh Hashanah. And certainly we don't have that lockdown, which I think is a major relief to the public.
Now, in terms of daily infections, we've seen a slight drop over the past day, but we're still on very high numbers. Do you think that, as you've put it in the past, the injections will beat out the infections as we leave the festival?
Yeah, I mean, I think what we're seeing is the third shots, the booster shots, are generating really, really good antibody levels in people specifically, especially the younger people who are less of a risk of becoming serious patients, but do tend to spread the virus. And that's really important. So I think that is happening. And the question is just kind of what the levels of interactions are going to be over the festival, how sensible people are going to be in terms of just kind of applying some precautions. But I think everything that we've seen about these third shots, about these booster shots, does kind of reassure us. So I expect that we will see a spike after the Chagim. I think that's almost inevitable. You know, it could even be a few thousand extra infections. But if that's not translating into serious cases in hospitals, then we could be in an okay situation.
Now, Rosh Hashanah is typically a time for introspection, for looking back at the past year, for thinking about how to move forward moving into the next year. As we look back at Israel over the past 12 months, what can we say that the country has learnt in terms of dealing with this virus?
I think that the country has certainly learnt, or should have learnt, a sense of modesty, a sense of being careful about the achievements that we claim for ourselves. That sense that, okay, we may be proud of our achievements in fighting the virus, in vaccination or whatever, but it doesn't do well to jump to that conclusion and say, okay, we've defeated the virus now, this is it, we've finished, we've won out against the virus, because it's a whole new world, it's a pandemic, we don't know. And hopefully, what this has taught decision makers is to be able to say, you know, we don't know. We think that we've got ourselves into a relatively good place. We don't know what's coming next, and to have that sense. And the other thing that I think we should be taking is getting rid of a sense of internal Israeli complacency about COVID achievements. Because if there's one thing that the last few months have taught us, it's that we may be winning out on a domestic level here in Israel, but at the end of the day, this is a global pandemic. And really, you know, really success in this pandemic is going to be when there is some sense of global success. So there's no way of saying, hey, you know, we in Israel are okay, and things are going crazy in the outside world, because it didn't take very long before that Delta variant, that huge kind of situation going on in India, reach these shores. So hopefully we've learned that sense of that we are interconnected internationally.
And looking forward, I mean, obviously no one 12 months ago could have predicted how the last year would have panned out. But I'm going to ask you to do exactly that. Tell us what you think we can expect moving forward in terms of this pandemic. Where may Israel and the world be in another 12 months?
Yeah, I mean, I think one really interesting thing looking back 12 months is just how kind of our perception and expectations change, and how we forget what our expectations were. Because if we would have had a conversation just before last Rosh Hashanah, we would have probably said to each other, hey, you know, we're excited about these vaccines. We don't know exactly what the effectiveness of these vaccines will be. Maybe it'll be 50%, maybe 60%, maybe 70%. You know, we don't know. And we fully expect that once we've had these vaccines, we will need booster shots. And what happened was that the vaccines arrived. They were giving us 95% protection. And somehow we all forgot that, or many people forgot that and said, ah, you know, that 95% protection is now what we expect. And for some reason, people stopped expecting to have a booster shot. And everybody acted terribly surprised when the effectiveness was not quite so high and when people needed booster shots. So I think one thing is that we've learned to actually really try to remember accurately what our expectations were and have realistic expectations. And I think if we look back in the kind of 12 months ago as well, I think we also need to have that sense of perspective of we tend to forget very quickly just how hard things were under the first lockdown and how overjoyed we felt at first when we could go, you know, slightly further from our homes. And to keep that sense that, you know, living in a pandemic is going to require those compromises and to appreciate when we are living in the relatively good times.
Absolutely. And we will, of course, hope to retain that perspective throughout the year coming up. Amy, turning to you, yesterday we saw the closing ceremony for the Paralympics in Tokyo, and most of the Israeli delegation returned back to Israel. So tell us about the last 2 weeks of competition in Tokyo and the Israeli sporting achievements we've seen over there.
Yeah, so this has been actually a very successful Paralympics for the Israeli delegation. Overall, Israel brought home 9 medals from these games in Tokyo, which is the highest number at one game since 2004 in Athens. And 6 of those medals were gold, which is the highest number of gold medals at one games for Israel since 1988. So definitely a major achievement. 8 of the 9 medals were in swimming, and they were by 3 very impressive young men. Iyad Shalabi, who won 2 gold medals, and he also was the first Israeli Arab to ever win a medal at either the Olympics or the Paralympics. And then Mark Maliar, who won 2 gold medals and a bronze, and Amida Daon, who won 2 gold medals and a silver. And the only non-swimming medal that Israel won in Tokyo was in rowing, with Moan Samuel. She won a bronze in Rio 5 years ago at the Paralympics, and she won a silver this time around, and she's very happy to have improved on her standing from 5 years ago.
And of course, there have been many inspiring stories throughout these games, some of which we've reported on. What would you say for you has been some of the standout moments?
Yeah, I mean, it really, when you look at just the entire delegation, Israel sent 33 athletes to these games, and really every one of them is so inspiring. They've all worked so hard just to get to the games and then worked incredibly hard to be there. I think the story of Iyad Chalabi is just particularly touching. Mark Malliar and Amida Daon, they're both very young, and this was their first games, but Iyad is 34, which is not old, obviously, but this is his fourth Paralympics. But this is the first time he's ever won a medal. So he's been at three games already, never came home with a medal. And I think his story just shows, you know, how much he's worked so hard to improve himself. He's improved on his own times and his own records over, you know, the past 15 years, and really saw the results. And he landed back in Israel yesterday, and you could see from the enormous greeting that he got at the airport, and then again in his hometown, people were so incredibly overjoyed for him, you know. And he's also just his own life story. I mean, he was born deaf, and then when he was a small child, he fell off a roof and he became paralyzed. And he competes at the most severe disability level in swimming at the Paralympics. And he's really just an incredible example of what you can achieve if you work incredibly hard. And I think he's something Israel should certainly be proud of.
Now, tell us, we did relatively well in the Olympic Games, bringing in Israel's biggest ever medal haul. In terms of the Paralympic Games, we seem to be higher up on that medal chart in terms of comparisons with other countries. Can you tell us why Israel seems to be particularly strong in some fields in the Paralympics? And this year we've seen it, obviously swimming has been the highlight.
Yeah, it's sort of interesting to try and compare. I mean, decades ago, Israel was really a huge dominating force in the Paralympics. We have hundreds of Paralympic medals actually in history. Over time, that's gone down and our Olympics medals have gone up. I think it's sort of apples to oranges a little bit. It's hard to sort of say, okay, well, this is changing and that is changing. On the Olympic side, I think there's just more of an investment in time and in money in identifying athletes early on and having them train. And that's why Israel's Olympic achievements are on the rise. And in the Paralympics, it's interesting to see. 30 years ago, Israel was, like, as I said, this really dominating force. And part of the reason for that was there were a lot more wounded IDF soldiers who were the right age. There were also, in the 60s and 70s, a lot of polio survivors who became sort of the right age to compete at the games. And so Israel had a bigger pool of people to take from. And also, there were a lot fewer countries that participated in the Paralympics. So, you know, there was just less competition. So, yeah, I think it's difficult to sort of compare exactly. I think, again, there's a growing awareness on both sides of the need to identify athletes early on and to really have them train from a very young age. I mean, when you listen to a lot of the stories, you know, Mark Meliar and his twin brother, who also was in Tokyo, they both started swimming at age 5. So, you know, they're 21 now, but that's 15 years that they've been working towards this. So there's a lot of facts and figures to look at, but I think it also often just comes down to the individuals who really shine in certain fields.
Now, Nathan, we're going to finish with somewhat of a miracle story before we leave our listeners for the new year. Tell us about the operation that took place in Israel yesterday, where doctors were able to separate co-joined twins joined at the head.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, these little girls had been born a year ago. It was just after their first birthday. And all through their lives, they've been connected at the heads. That has meant that they were unable to lift their head, which caused damage to their muscles and to their development. But even before they were born, doctors at Soroka Medical Center were busily planning for the moment when they would actually be able to separate them. It was a long wait because it was a very, very complicated preparation. They actually had to grow enough skin in order to cover their heads at the point where they separated them. If listeners log on and check my article on this, they'll get all the details about this. But we came to a point over the last few days when the babies were ready for this operation. It was a mammoth 12-hour operation in the operating theatre with a huge staff. And really, you know, the doctor said to me, any little mistake could have really cost the lives of both of these babies. But remarkably, everything went smoothly. They'd practiced very carefully on 3D models. So much preparation had gone into this operation, and they managed to safely separate these little girls. The doctor also described to me this very moving moment when they first looked at each other and what that was like. And I mean, the great part of this is that Dr. Lazar, who spoke to me, said he's very, very optimistic that these girls will go on to lead normal and healthy lives, which is just a great and uplifting story for the beginning of the new year.
And with that, I want to wish you both a happy and healthy new year, and of course to our listeners.
Thank you, Raoul.
Thank you.
And we'll be back in a couple of days at the beginning of 5782 for more of what's important in Israel, the Middle East, and the Jewish world.
Hi, it's Sarah Tuttle Singer from the Times of Israel. Come join our community and support fast and fair independent journalism. You can sign up with the link at the bottom of every single article on the site.
Thanks for listening to the Times of Israel's Daily Briefing. A special thanks to our producer, Raoul Woodliff. I'm Amanda Borshaldan.
You can find us daily wherever you get your podcasts.
And on our mothership, thetimesofisrael.com.